You are listening to CICK Fresh, Smithers Community Radio, 93.9 FM. We are broadcasting from the train car located on unceded Gidimden territory, home of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. Today's story is about our most precious resource, water, and the bringing together of diverse communities to protect it. So what do Indigenous, ranching, scientific, and Christian communities have in common? A love and appreciation of the Upper Bulkley River and the motivation to solve problems. What I am talking about is the first phase of a multi-year riparian restoration project in the Upper Bulkley and Maurice area. So what do I mean by riparian? A riparian zone or riparian area is the ground between land and a river or stream. So the interface between land and running water. The word riparian is derived from the Latin ripa, meaning riverbank. These zones are important natural biofilters, protecting aquatic environments from excessive sedimentation, polluted surface runoff, and erosion. They also supply shelter and food for many aquatic animals and shade that limits stream temperatures. These zones will reduce the stream energy. So the meandering curves of a river, combined with vegetation and root systems, will slow the flow of the water, which reduces soil erosion and flood damage. The riparian zones increased biodiversity and wildlife corridors, enabling aquatic and riparian organisms to move along river systems. Funding for this project came from a grant from the Healthy Watersheds Initiative, a Watersheds BC and Real Estate Foundation of BC program investing in watershed conservation and restoration projects, while strengthening relationships with First Nations and Indigenous-led organizations. This project was run through the Maurice Watershed Monitoring Trust, a trust that was established in 2012 for long-term monitoring of water quality and natural resource management activities in the Maurice Water Management Area. So this area extends around Houston, Topley, and Grand Isle, including the Maurice and Bulkley Rivers, as well as the Maurice, Tatsa, and Nanaka Lakes, and parts of Babine and Utsa Lakes. Project management and coordination was provided by a local business, Northwest Research and Monitoring. Next up, you'll hear Rick Boudois, a trustee of the Maurice Watershed Monitoring Trust, on why the Bulkley and Maurice area is important to the trust, what they see for the future of the area, and what makes him excited about this work.
My name is Rick Boudois, and I'm a trustee with the Maurice Watershed Management Trust, and I'm also the Director of Operations there. We've been focused on water since our inception in 2012. It's in our name, it's in our trust agreement, it's in all of our planning, all of the everything that we do. The Healthy Watersheds Initiative, it's on restoration in the Maurice Watershed, and so it's something that we've been working on for many years, actually, to try to get to this place. Because we're so intimately related with the Wet'suwet'en, and that's the heart of their traditional territory. The trust agreement, publicly available, is something that has settlers that settle the trust and then put it in the care of trustees. So there happen to be five trustees, and all of the settlers of this trust are Wet'suwet'en hereditary chiefs and house chiefs, who have their traditional house territories within the geographic area. We see ourselves as sort of building a bridge or bridges between the water funders and the communities because we're local. It's our area of interest. I think I mentioned that we've been investing in this region for many years as the trust. We have our intimate relationships, particularly with the First Nations. As I mentioned, the settlers are all chiefs. And the formation of the trust was based on water sustainability and salmon related to that when we started. So it's nothing but upwards trajectory from what we can see. More focusing on water, more involvement and empowerment of First Nations and their initiatives and their values. And we feel like we're bringing those things together. I am really really excited about relationships, new relationships that get built and that get sustained over time, whether that's with individuals, agencies, funders, or communities, or other First Nations. Just based on some of my experiences, I could see water is sacred in all cultures across the world. And so anytime you get to work in resources and work towards making them sustainable and resilient for themselves, for the environment, and for the people, that's awesome.
That was Rick Boudois from the Maurice Watershed Monitoring Trust. Another very important organization involved in this project has been AROSHA, whose work in northern BC supports a community of environmental stewards who live in this beautiful area. A public workshop was held by AROSHA in early December of 2021. Speakers included those who worked on the project, landowners whose land the restoration took place on, and additional speakers who have been doing this type of restoration work in other areas of northern BC. Here's a clip of Cindy Verbeek, the AROSHA Northern BC representative and community mobilizer, introducing herself and the project. Cindy was instrumental in organizing the community outreach in Houston and liaising with the landowners whose land the restoration took place on.
I am Cindy Verbeek. I am with AROSHA Canada. We're a Christian conservation organization and we have a project here in Houston, a nature center and a fish hatchery. And we're doing a little bit of riparian restoration work, and we're hoping to do more of that in the next little while. And we've been partnering with Maurice Watershed Monitoring Trust on the project.
That was just Cindy Verbeek from AROSHA. Next up, we have Jeff Anderson, the project manager, talking about his role in the project, other stakeholders of the project, and about river health.
So in 2012, the Maurice Watershed Monitoring Trust was formed, and it was formed with a focus on water, essentially. And in the early days, that was looking at water quality and monitoring design. And nowadays, river health, watershed health seems to be more appropriate than just monitoring itself. And so a lot of the programming of the Maurice Trust is driven by that. Last year, the Healthy Watershed Initiative was released by the province of British Columbia, and that initiative was really to focus on community-led actions towards river health, river restoration, monitoring or planning towards restorative action, partnered with AROSHA, Ministry of Forest, Department of Fisheries and Oceans to a smaller degree, and put forward a proposal to do some restoration in the Upper Bulkley. I'm the project lead.
I'd say my involvement is to implement the project in a way that has community outreach, builds on existing initiatives that are happening. I'm a river scientist, and so I want to see progress in the work that I do, and I see a lot of opportunity for progress in the conservation conversation, if you will, where often one sector is pitted against another sector. But I think there are shared interests with river health, and although those interests come about from different reasons, they result in the same solution. Yeah, there's been, a number of focuses over decades identifying where impacts are and where conservation or sustainability efforts can be focused. So I think most recently, the Civic Salmon Foundation did some work along with the Office of Wet'suwet'en and Eclipse GIS. A number of people have done desktop analyses using things like the Wild Salmon Policy to identify where hotspots of impacts might be. So the Upper Bulkley seems like a place that stood out in each of those assessments that have done is somewhere that's got a lot of point-specific impacts, a lot of different user groups operating in the same area. And so this particular project is hoping to weigh into that and just find community-led solutions to what those impacts are. The Healthy Watersheds Initiative is a provincial-scale initiative that's happening. And there's a sentiment to learn from one project to another as best as can be. This particular project is hoping to synergize with a project next door in the Chaco Basin. And really that synergy is focusing on community-led knowledge and education around really important components of aquatic health. So in this particular case, something as simple as a river corridor is quite profound from an aquatic perspective. And I think in the dialogue, we're realizing that farmers want riparian areas for different reasons than conservation wants riparian areas. And that's the beauty of identifying the shared interest is for farmers, that might be protection for their farm field. For fishes, that might be protection from sunshine. That vegetation has a lot of interaction with the river itself, whether that be providing structure for the river for aquatic health, or whether it be providing shading for predation or for sunshine for fishes. And so river corridors, so over riparian areas, is something that's been lost throughout British Columbia and Canada, just as human development has become more and more. That's something that can be put back and can have a profound impact and maybe disproportionate compared to some other parts of the system. Yeah, I think the unique nature of this project is, you know, that the opportunity to bridge community with scientific outcomes or with ecological outcomes. Again, it's the shared balance. But the exciting part about that is the crossroads of all of those that are, you know, that includes river health, that includes the community, that includes needed directions right now as we're watching our salmon populations decline, and it includes local dialogue. And this, I think that makes this somewhat unique. I think what I would also offer there is, you know, on the community outreach is, you know, this fantastic to have organizations like Arosha who can reach deeper into the community. The HWI project is, I think, maybe one part of one piece of the puzzle is a good way to look at it. Is the Upper Bulkley Roundtable for a number of years has been discussing some of the issues, some of the opportunities, some of the monitoring that's happened in the area. And one of the sentiments that's really come out of that is how river health, stream temperature, riparian areas are really something that needs to be replaced. So when this project was initially conceived, that was really the thinking, was to it could be an extension of the Upper Bulkley Roundtable dialogue and find ways to find the shared outcomes between farmers and rivers. And the Upper Bulkley salmon population has been declining significantly for quite some time. And so that brings an additional level of focus to that area as so somewhere that needs immediate help. And so the riparian corridors are certainly one way that contributes to that increased river health and so on and so forth. The bigger part of that picture, I think, is a larger initiative or larger concept around what river health is. And so river health really focuses around a number of things, and in the jargon we call that environmental flows nowadays. Really, how much river does the water need, and what is the dynamics that river has that's healthy? What's the glue or the fabric that really brings together watershed health? And so riparian corridors, replacing the riparian, is actually one key part of the pillars of environmental flows, if you will. This is really about trying to take one of those important pieces and put it on the ground somewhere in the watershed.
You just heard Jeff Anderson, the project manager for the Upper Bulkley and Maurice Area Restoration Project. Now let's hear from the guest speakers from the December workshop who have experience in riparian restoration. One of these, Lee Hesketh, started the Farmland Riparian Interface Stewardship Program, or FRISP, 20 years ago, and this is an innovative program of the BC Cattlemen's Association. The program's goal is to address watershed resource concerns by encouraging sustainable land management practices in the agricultural sector. Lee is well known for his collaborative leadership approach, which promotes cooperation and dialogue among the stakeholders. Here's Lee talking about his work and how ranchers can be part of the solution.
So I run a program, like I said, through the BC Cattlemen's Association, that I've been in the field of habitat restoration and solving problems between the agriculture sector and government and First Nations and basically all stakeholders. So that's my forte now. And there's a common denominator with all of these is the fact that we've lost the riparian corridors or the wood or basically what holds these corridors together. It's not about just throwing rocks in. It's actually about growing the riparian corridor back. Every stream is dynamic. It comes with its own challenges, whether it's, you know, your base of stream material, your gradient, every site is different. But again, the big thing I look at often with when I go to a creek system is I'm getting often called to look at a field and the creek's running through it. So you have, you know, a damaged riparian or a creek bank. But what I do then is go and look at a healthy or a natural site along that creek to determine what it looks like naturally in a healthy state. And that's my guidelines for what I try to achieve or look like, what we can turn that piece of riverbank back on that hayfield, what it should look like. the key to this stuff is making it look like nobody's done anything. And that's the challenge with it, is when people come to these sites, they quite literally ask, well, what has occurred? Because they think everything looks great, not realizing that that's man-made. And if there's an art to this thing, is like I said, if you do it right, nobody will give you any credit. And again, the erosion has stopped. We have a far healthier fish population. The farmer actually, because the creek, the water has stayed in the creek system, he actually has irrigation in the summertime. So it's a win-win-win. And the reality of it is that we've only got this one little green planet. So let's do the best of it. And a lot of times, other sectors of society look at us ranchers as being a real problem and, you know, a challenge for the environment. Whereas I've always said that, you know what, a rancher can be a real problem if they don't understand proper management, but we can be a total asset to that area if we know what we're doing. And so this is where I engage the, you know, outside the community to let them know that we're managing large tracts of land, and a responsible landowner, a rancher, we can change that, the value, the biodiversity of that land, or enhance it simply by managing our land base properly. At the same time, we can make a hell of a mess very, very quickly if we do stupid things. So the long-term goal is, yeah, let's get smart. Let's apply good management techniques, and we can make a change. And that's why I'm really excited about the work that you guys are doing up in that area. Shelton, especially, taking on some of my early work in the Prince George area and trying to use some common sense solutions. Keep those riparian corridors in place. Everybody, I always laugh because I have to deal with farmers and ranchers telling me I got my tractor stuck along the hayfield. And I go, no, you got it stuck in the creek. And that's usually the valuable area that was once very valuable riparian corridor. And so this is where I know people have trouble giving up space to creeks and river systems. But the reality, especially given the circumstances of what I'm seeing in Merritt, Princeton, Lower Fraser and stuff, giving healthy riparian corridors a chance to establish is key if we're going to be dealing with climate change and what's coming at us in the future. Well, the most rewarding thing about it is myself being raised on a ranch. Everybody assumed that I was going to go into the ranching sector. And the sad thing was I went to school and learned how to use a pencil. And so now I've taken up the job of habitat restoration expert to pay for my expensive hobby of being a rancher, being involved with a ranch family. With that said, that's the biggest thing, is being able to actually go out and help my constituents, which are my ranching community, actually make a difference. Like I said, a good rancher, a smart rancher, is actually often can be an incredible environmental steward, because they understand what's actually happening and they can manage the environment and economic sustainability, which is key.
You just heard Lee Hesketh from the BC Cattlemen's Association. And up next, we have Chelton Van Gleven. Chelton works for the BC government in the Ministry of Forests, Lands, and Natural Resource Operations. He has been implementing restoration work in the Nechaco since 2012. Here's an excerpt from the December Arosha workshop, where Chelton talks about the restoration work in the Chilaco and the importance of riparian corridors.
I'm Chelton Van Gleven. I'm a forester. I work for the province. I've got a tree planting background. I don't know if I'm a rancher. I'm kind of more of a suitcase rancher, I guess you call me. We butcher about 60 cows a year. I've definitely got lots of skin in the game on the ranching scene. I've been working in the Chilaco River since about 2010, 2012. One of the ranchers I knew, I'd done a little planting job for him in previous years. And he said, Chelton, you know, they've been logging pretty hard in the watershed. And, you know, they want to take some more next door to my place. And it doesn't seem right. I wonder if you could... I wonder if we could come in, maybe look at some maps with you. I'm like, well, sure. So he comes in, he brought the whole valley with him. So we had an impromptu sort of 20-person presentation or meeting. And I think that's how it started. Everyone that lives there, they've all bought the problem. They didn't create the problem. They bought the problem. And that's often the case with ranching. You know, you bought the problem. You bought someone else's design, someone else's ideas. And if they weren't good ideas, it takes a lot of idea. It takes a lot of guts to change things. It's too big of a problem to take on by yourself. It's too big of a problem to take on with your neighbor. I mean, you can take it on by yourself. I'm not saying you can't. However, when things get unraveled as bad as they are in the Chilaco, it's big. Like, it's really big. I can't stress how important it is. Organizing people, ideas, funding. So all these groups together in alignment delivers. So about riparian corridors. So think of the things that Lee just said. He just said, you know, you don't just think of the stream, you got to think of the corridor that it needs. And, you know, if there's one thing, if there's a message that if we can rejig the way we value the land and focus on designing your operation so that corridor can stay healthy, so many good things will flow from it. That's my argument. Okay, so the Chilaco, it's about 4,000 square kilometers just to the west of Prince George. What we do is we look for every single sequence of air photo we can get. So in the Chilaco, it's kind of like there's 14 or 15 sequences from 1946 up to current. And it's just a way to, you can see what it used to be, and now you can see, and then you can see where it is now. When the stream's eroding the field and moving this way, it leaves a gravel bar behind it. And so when you're doing historic air photo analysis and you see the size of these point bars, it's an indicator of change and that the stream's moving. And place the stream's moving is the place where the riparian area has been moved, or the places where people have turned the river corridor into a field where there isn't any roughness or any vegetation to stop it. Rivers just, when the flood comes up, they just love cutting through fields. And the significance of that is the river just got shorter. So you got to think of slope. Slope is rise over run, right? Like how far up or down does it go over the distance? When you just shorten the river this much, it's still dropping that much elevation, but it's doing it over a much shorter time. And so you just got made the river steeper, and it makes everything change. Something about warm water. So warm water is less dense. When water's cold, it's denser, and you'll see more water in the stream. When you've got warm water, it actually gets lost to the gravel quicker. So you, hot water, you'll get less water in your streams. You know, there's loss of bank vegetation. There's loss of food for ungulates and birds. There's less food for invertebrates, which are food for fish. When we see the rivers straighten out and get wide and not have riparian, everything pays the price and everything falls apart. Your water quality decreases. You know, it's just not as good as it would be if it had riparian. A big part of doing this kind of work is building trust with landowners. They're like, they know their banks are eroding, but what do we do about it? You know, some people want to throw a rock in it, but you know, that's a lot of rock. You know, the rock that you put in is probably worth more than you could get for the land. But it's an initial step. Landowners know they're losing land. And if we can come up with a compromise, the riparian areas that we build, it'll at least save them the hassle of picking all the sticks off the field when the flood comes up. You know, it creates a bit of a filter. When you build the riparian areas, at least along the edge, you're going to knock the sand out of the flood water. So then the only thing you get on the field is the silt. And all the fertilizer at $1,000 a ton, silt on the field is a pretty good thing. Generally speaking, we're reducing the erosion rates of these banks by almost 95%. We're still getting a little bit of erosion, but we're slowing it down so much.
You just heard Chelten van Gelovin from the Ministry of Lands, Forest, and Natural Resource Operations. You are listening to CICK Fresh, Smithers Community Radio, 93.9 FM. Now you've heard all about the organizations and the importance of riparian areas. If you're just tuning in, a riparian zone or riparian area is the ground between land and a river or stream, so the interface between land and running water. This story is about the restoration of the riverbanks along the Upper Bulkley that was done in 2021 through the Healthy Watersheds Initiative. In the spring of 2021, approximately 4,000 willow stakes were harvested, prepared, and planted across four sites selected on two separate properties. Willow was chosen as it is a plant that loves to grow along riverbanks, and very importantly, it can grow roots and new leaves from a cutting. So these dormant, unrooted cuttings are used because they are easy to harvest, easy to plant, inexpensive, and effective. Next up, you will hear from Adam Wrench, a key contractor on the project, speaking about the harvested willow. Adam is an environmental consultant with 10 years of experience in environmental impact assessment.
willow before we took it over to soak it. So this again was in the spring. So these were dormant still and cut right before planting. So then they went in the water and soaked for several days up to a week before we actually installed them at the site. And then we also had some rooted to willow that had set up in the spring. So I cut some willow whips and we had them rooted at Woodmere.
You just heard Adam Wrench on the willow harvesting and planting. The live willow stakes were planted deep into the ground using a device called a water jet stinger. And Adam was key in building one for the community. The required planting depth for the willow is about 3 to 6 feet. So the bottom of the cutting is able to easily access. As you can imagine, digging many 3 to 6 feet holes is time consuming, so they needed a tool to do this efficiently. The water jet stinger was specially designed to use high pressure water to hydro drill a hole in the ground to plant these unrooted hardwood cuttings. It's basically a water pump attached to a long pole with a high pressure nozzle at the end. It's simple to operate and transport, requires very little training, and is fast. Another advantage is that it liquefies the soil around the hole, which will then settle around the cutting, eliminating air pockets in the rooting zone. In the late summer and fall, restoration work was focused on 5 sites. These ranged in size from 400 to 1400 meters squared. Each of these properties had similar problems, which was the outer banks of the stream eroding farm fields. Some of these issues were 20 years old and continuously worsening. Here's one of the landowners talking about the problems they experienced.
Just going into the river, about every year we'd lose. And over the course of 8 years of owning this land, we probably lost like 20, 30 feet between each corner to the erosions every year.
During restoration, the steep banks were first resloped to be more gradual. Then logs were driven into the banks in a process called pegboarding. Behind the logs, more willows were planted, either through live staking, as was done in the spring, or using rooted willow saplings from Woodmere Nursery. They also wove some willow wattle fencing around these stakes. Here's Adam Wrench again, speaking about the bank stabilization process.
And the landowner here had been losing considerable amount of ground every year. So these outside corners that we were working on were quite concerning for them, and they were potentially going to lose most of their field because there is a potential for it to actually cut right across their field and drop out, straightening out the river just farther down. So they were quite excited to have us come and do some of this work for them. It was really silty soil and a lot of large clumps of sod falling into the river. And so basically we began by trying to pull that vertical bank back to roughly a 2-to-1 slope. So we started by taking the excavator with a cleanup bucket and just shearing off the sod and retaining it. And then we were placing that back after we reshaped it and took away the spoil material. So we were working from the water edge back. So we didn't actually do any in-stream stuff so as not to create a big sediment plume into the water. Using the mini excavator, we're grabbing these posts that are, you know, about 3 meters long, 3.5 meters long, depending on the site. We're using shorter posts toward the toe and longer posts up on the top, as you might imagine, with the idea that we're trying to get this vertical structure to kind of pin the bank in place and get the bottom of these posts down below the watermark is the goal. Wasn't always possible depending on the substrate. It's we did our best to drive them as deep as we could get, but it's not always perfect, but it worked pretty well overall. It was pretty good. There's a lot of posts. So these big posts we're putting in at about 1 meter spacing, but toward the upper and lower end of the sites where we thought they might be most vulnerable to failure, we tightened that up to even 0.5 meter just for that initial section to provide as much vertical structure as possible and hopefully to anchor everything in place. So after we reshaped and before we piled in the posts, we laid out some erosion matting along the bottom. So that's just a cotton thread with some, basically, it looks like straw in a mat. And we decided to use that just along the very base of the hill on some sites. So as part of our trial to figure out what's going to work and what doesn't, we did some sites with and some sites without. So we'll have some good comparisons, hopefully, in the years to come to see what actually worked better. We did some willow wattle fences along the bottom. The idea being that if we get any sediment deposition, which we should in flood, it'll really plant those into the sediment. And those are all willow that should start sprouting, hopefully, in right along the toe where we see this kind of the most vulnerable spot. That's sort of the weakest area that we want to armor as best we can. And then we've got a whole bunch of live staking between the posts and shovel plantings. And so the willow burrito, basic idea is you're wrapping up using that erosion matting. So the straw-based erosion matting with the thread, and then you're rolling up willow and a bit of soil in this erosion matting, and then you're pegging it right along the toe of the slope, with the idea being that that's going to hopefully prevent that, that toe erosion from taking out the site. So there, after we're done with all the live staking, the trenching, before we do that riparian plant, we're then placing the tops. And the idea with the tops is just to maximize the roughness of the slope. And with the tops actually in some of the current, we noticed it right away, actually, how it's pushing the current away. And of course, this is all stuff that these ideas were largely developed, of course, by Lee Hesketh and Chelton. And so we're just sort of taking their model and kind of building it out and adding a few little things that come along, like Jeff's burrito idea and things like that. But, and so we were using quite a bit of cottonwood as well, sort of trying to plant the future forest, if you will. So we'd have the willow as sort of the mid-story, and then ideas if some of these cottonwood stakes take, those would be the trees. And then we also had some rooted to willow. They were ready this fall, so we had a shovel plant program along with everything else. So we were trying them at different places on the slope and plugging them in at the end. And at the top of the slope where the trench was, we planted that nice berm with a lot of this rooted willow as well. So hopefully that takes.
You just heard Adam Wrench on the stabilization of the banks. On one property, approximately 1.5 kilometers of fencing was moved further from the riverbank to provide a riparian zone protected from the cattle. This was done with additional financial support from Society for Ecosystem Restoration in Northern BC, or CERN, and Fisheries and Oceans Canada. Here's our last clip from Adam Wrench talking a bit about how the landowners felt about the project.
I really found that the landowners were by and large very willing and very excited to work on these issues that have kind of plagued a lot of them for a lot of years. And, you know, some landowners quite a history and a lot of experience in working with Max Entry, for example. And so they just bring a lot to the table. You know, when you live on the river and you see it move and you see how it behaves, there's a lot of good input there and just expertise and knowledge about how to get things done too, right? I mean, they're also happen to be good on machinery and getting things done. But overall, I think they were just so excited to see some money flowing into the community in such a collaborative project to really do something that we're all coming from different places, but focused on the same goal of kind of restoring these systems. So I think they were so happy to partner with us on that.
You just heard Adam Wrench. Next up, we have three of the landowners on whose properties the restoration took place, talking about how the project went.
Well, I knew about the agriculture environmental program, but that was big ones, rock, dumping rock. There wasn't a lot of the riparian work. This was fairly new. Lee, he was the one that he was up for one of our workshops, and he came out and he says, no, you don't use rock here. You use what you have here, the willow, the cottonwood, and you stabilize the banks on that front. You don't use rock. But, well, you guys came, you always talked to us. We had all the guys from DFO and everything that came out, went over some more stuff, why it's important to do this. And like me and the husband there, we love the fish. We love the fish. And we knew that that sediment going in wasn't good for it. So everything went well. Adam explained everything really well. Yeah, I've got no complaints. They were really good. And it was a learning curve. They didn't even know, like, made it so much better. Learned a lot this summer about stream habitat and how to make it better. As a landowner, no more land going into the river. As somebody that likes the wildlife, just to bring it back like the way it was before the train tracks come through here and cut it all through, it was really cool to see how much vegetation, how much willow, and even like moose moving in and stuff like that. More moose, the better, and just make it a little healthier for everybody. It'd be nice to see the fish back up here. There was tons when I was a kid. Like, I caught my first fish in this river when I was like 6 years old. So it's nice to see the fish come back and everything else with it. It was a massive learning curve. I know that when you take on something, you don't think it's this big, and then you dive into it and it's like, oh, wow, got this to do, this to do. I think it was done really well, even though like some of the hurdles, they were jumped over pretty well. And then lots of engagement. Like it wasn't like, oh, we're doing this and you go stand over there. It was really good to have. They wanted the landowners to engage. They wanted their input. They wanted to work with us. So it just makes everything better when you've got people that want to work with each other on all levels.
You are listening to CICK Fresh, 93.9 FM, Smithers Community Radio. You just heard from one of the landowners on whose property riparian restoration took place in 2021. Next up, we have two more landowners.
Before I owned the farm, yeah, it's been going on for years, I think. Taking probably 5 to 10 feet of land kind of every year, depending on the spring runoff. But it's kind of hard when you see your land going to the coast. So I was helping. We were just placing the tops. We have a mini excavator that we were using there as well. And I hauled a lot of the wood to the sites and worked at it for, must have been 6 weeks or so, something like that. Yeah, just trying to keep the land in the valley. Yeah, and we've been working on some riparian fencing the last couple weeks here. So we're hoping to get more of a riparian along the Richfield there and keep the cattle out of there and so we can plant it. And yeah, hopefully it can grow up and kind of keep things where they're at. I think it's very practical. We're using resources that are on the land, so we're not trucking a lot of stuff from a long ways away. We're kind of just trying to work with what we got, and yeah, so I think it's been done fairly efficiently as much as possible. My kids or my grandkids could see the work that we did and just the fruits from that, and be more sustainable or more in tune with the environment.
And up next, we have our last landowner talking about the restoration.
Yeah, so just in brief, I'm kind of a fourth generation living on the Upper Bokley. So quite a history. So we're probably one of them old timers that are hard to change. But over the last 20 years, we've been actually doing quite a bit of work along the creek and valley bottoms. And so it was exciting. And same idea, the future, I think, for our kids, our grandkids, and the wish would be that we continue to be able to farm and harvest along the valley bottoms. Yeah, I think it's one of the things that you come to realize it needs a lot of space. Maxam Creek has a big flush, and I think the snow melt, the harvesting, a little bit of the difference in climate and the runoffs, it's changing from year to year. So I think we got to continually grow with the river. I think we have to continually learn from our mistakes, but also learn and try new things. And I think, it's probably one of the great things that you guys are doing is that we look at different management regimes, how we do things, how wide we clear off areas. I think the one thing I'd really like to see in the future, you guys get a continued, you know, as we look through the whole program, it should be a yearly thing. And the more funding and the opportunity for everybody in the community and everybody to be involved, I think the better. You know, if you could do this every year for the next 50 years, it's a good thing. And we'll all learn from it and keep track of it. So, yeah, thank you very much.
We hope this project will continue in the future to deal with these eroding banks and creating a healthy river for all.